You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Maddie and Trix is an animated show about a visually impaired 7-year-old, Maddie, and her dog best friend, Trix, who find music and adventure in everyday life. The show started as a podcast before transitioning to a TV show, which aims to be equally enjoyable for sighted and non-sighted children. Producers Turnip and Duck worked with various sight loss organisations to ensure the show is as authentic and inclusive as possible, and we're joined today by Aidan O'Donovan from Turnip and Duck to learn more. Hi Aidan, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi Amelia, it's great to be here, thanks for having me.
So how did Maddie and Triggs as a project first begin?
Well, it was actually on a previous project that we had produced. So a part of the delivery process was putting audio description to it. And to our shame, we didn't know what that was or had never encountered it up until that point. And it was when the person who was doing the audio description in RTE, Oran O'Neill, he pointed out that the cartoon we made worked very well as just as a piece of audio, which kind of made sense as that's our background. We're not trained animators. Although we produce animation, our background is in sound and music. It was nice to hear that. I guess the nature of the show was quite dialogue based. But then we heard Oran explain, well, that he was blind. He had lost his sight as an adult. I believe he had worked as an editor or a mixer prior to losing his sight. But since he lost his sight, he had begun to specialize in the world of audio description. That was a bit of a penny drop moment, because as well as kind of realizing that we had never even considered this up to now, we were just a little bit embarrassed, I guess. So there was a seed planted in that moment and thinking, well, wouldn't it be cool to create a TV show to at least consider the audience up front? You know, we had literally made 26 episodes of our previous show, hadn't thought about vision impaired or blind audiences until the last minute when this contractual obligation of audio description came our way. So could we create a TV show that might work even if you couldn't see it? That felt like an interesting creative challenge and a worthy one. And over time, that developed into, I guess, the core mission of Maddie and Triggs, which is that if two kids, one sighted and one vision impaired, were to sit down side by side and watch the show together, that neither would have a lesser experience.
What are some of the typical adventures that Maddie and Triggs might get up to in an episode?
We had to discover our way into the show. And when we talk about it now, it doesn't seem that complicated. It's a show that works on both levels. But even though we had worked in sound and music our whole lives, it took us a while to realize, well, the answer is to make it work as a piece of audio first. So again, as a creative challenge, that was really exciting because we've always loved giving lots of attention to the music in shows we do. And that's not just kind of kids' music, but really pushing the boat in terms of exploring different genres and just introducing diverse array of music to kids. So that combined with the creative opportunities that working purely in sound gave us meant we could kind of come at the stories from the same story place we would normally come at, but without having to worry about what would normally be production considerations in animation. Animation is very, very expensive. It's very risky. And, you know, you need to, there's a lot of scoping goes on before you start throwing money at doing an episode. Whereas when you're working in audio, you have a bit more freedom to experiment, I think. So, for instance, we have an episode where it's on McGinty's farm, who's one of the colorful characters in the town of Higgledy Piggledy, where Maddie lives. He has an animal orchestra. So any animal you can think of plays an instrument in his orchestra. And that would have been a difficult pitch in the world of animation, whereas we allowed ourselves to go there by working purely in sound. We try as much as possible to format each episode around a key sound and a piece of music. It's all about listening, and the jumping off sound of the episode often tells us where we'll go. So the pilot episode was called Bubbles. It's bath time in Higgledy Piggledy, and Maddie is helping Mum to give Triggs, her doggy best friend, a bath, and they're playing with an empty shampoo bottle, and they hear the sound of bubbles underwater, something which very much came from my own life, my small kids at the time. But them imagining what the sound of this bubbles could be, that transports them on an imaginary journey to the bottom of the ocean. So the bottle becomes a submarine, and they have this adventure where they're looking for Trig's squeaky toy, Dennis the Ducky. So the combination of bubbles and the tune is what makes that happen. Oh, there's a really sweet episode called Knock Knock. Very simple idea. So the sound is the knock knock at the door. And it's based on Maddie and Triggs. They're waiting for a letter from their favorite Uncle George, but each time the door knocks, it's not who they expect, which is disappointing for them, but also funny for us. We play with it. We play with the comedy tropes of that. So there's kind of very, I guess, relatable domestic. Our audience is preschool, so it's sort of 4 to 7 year olds. So very kind of relatable stuff that kids will see at home. But we also take it to more surreal places. So there's an episode called The Pearly Whites. The sound in question in that episode is the sound of brushing teeth. Again, based on my own frustrations, trying to get my kids to brush their teeth. But we always wanted to do Barbershop Quartet as a musical challenge. And I thought, oh, that'd be funny if like you had a set of teeth singing to the kid, explaining why it's important to brush your teeth. So that's what we end up in that episode. It's a real surreal leap where Maddie's teeth, her pearly whites, start literally singing to her. There's one episode where the wind is a character. So we thought, well, let's have a character we literally can't see at all. So that became another interesting challenge in terms of how to visualize that. The actor we got to play the wind is actually a vision impaired jazz singer from Ireland, Emily Conway. She's a great advocate for, you know, representation and disability, and she's a killer singer. So that was a lovely example where I think as much as possible, we've tried to discover the stories. That maybe sounds a little bit trite, but because of the uniqueness of the pitch of the series, I guess in some cases, yeah, discovering them has been the way to go.
And speaking of voices, the visually impaired star of the show is a young voice actor, Bonnie O'Mara. Why was she the right fit for Maddie's voice?
Myself and Colm, we were very aware that this wasn't our story to tell. You know, we're both sighted and we don't have direct experience of living with a disability and certainly not vision impairment. So the first thing we did was get in touch with Vision Ireland, who are the RNIB equivalent here in Ireland. And we really bounced the idea off them and told them what we were thinking. And we just wanted to be respectful and careful that we weren't going gung-ho into this. We didn't want to create an issues-led show. And we just wanted to get the tone right as much as possible. But they did see value in what we were talking about. And the first thing they said was, well, you should just talk to some kids. And it was during COVID, so it was all happening over Zoom. And initially, we were just getting feedback, which was very general, just asking the kids, well, what are you into? What cartoons you like? And, you know, it's no surprise they like the same cartoons sighted kids like, whereas some of the feedback was around, well, what worked and what didn't. But based on the relationship with Vision Ireland, and I have to give a shout out to Margaret and Emma in particular, who were amazing from day one, helping us out here. But they introduced us to the kids. And when it came time to casting together, we put out a call. We wanted to find a young girl who's around 7, who is legally blind and has direct experience of being blind or vision impaired, who can also sing. Ideally, there was so many challenges, or there was, you know, it was a really big ask, who everyone agreed was right for the role was Bonnie O'Mara. And it turned out she lived literally about 2 miles up the road from us and went to the same school as our kids, completely by coincidence. And at that point, we kind of thought, okay, the universe is on our side here. Something's telling us this is right and that we need to keep going with this project. So Bonnie stepped in and she immediately got it. We learned so much. We were kind of discovering the series as we went. And even in terms of, well, how do we represent this hero? Very early on, we were like, is this character fully blind? Do they have any vision? And many of the decisions of how the show formed were based on hanging out with Bonnie and her parents early and seeing how her vision impairment affected her. A lot of that fed into the makeup of Maddie. So Maddie's vision impairment, she can see a little, as the line in the opening of the show says, my eyes don't see as much as yours. So she does have some vision, but we went on a whole journey with her and her family and with Vision Ireland and Angel Eyes also, where we learned that blindness isn't a binary thing. It's not on off, which, you know, I would have been guilty of thinking that before, but you learn that it's a spectrum and you learn about stuff like photosensitivity and all these conditions that are on a spectrum. And as much as possible, we've tried to feed some of that into the show without it being too heavy or being too issues led, but we've tried to be as authentic as we can in terms of representing, you know, what vision impairment can mean for people. I have to say, Bonnie, I mean, we we found an absolute star. She is so good. I mean, it's not just that she can act and she can sing. She is an amazing actor, and she's one of the best singers I've ever worked with. I worked professionally as a musician for years and years, and she is so good. Like, she has perfect pitch. So on the musical front, we were like, well, we really want to push it. We want to push the genres. We want to be able to do lots of different styles of music and, you know, not just glockenspiel, kids' music. Not that there's nothing wrong with that. But when we could hear what Bonnie could do, again, everyone just got so excited. So at this point, our musical composition team has expanded to include other people, knowing that we have someone as talented as Bonnie, you know, at the end of the pipeline, and knowing that any script we give her, any tune we give her, any challenge we give her, she can just knock it out of the park, and she consistently does.
What are some of the ways that you've crafted the show to make it enjoyable for everyone?
After we had made the initial podcast run of 15 episodes, once we had that footing, we partnered up with a fantastic animation studio in Bristol called Sun and Moon. The small team that had initially worked on it, a lot of the knowledge that we had taken on board, there was a job to communicate that to the bigger team. So we came up with five pillars to kind of keep ourselves on track. So they were accessibility, representation, education, empowerment, and collaboration. And the first two are fairly apparent in what we've talked about already, but the latter ones, education, empowerment, collaboration, that really came into play when we started working with Sun and Moon. And as we began production, we had a workshop day in Bristol where a lot of the Irish crew came over to Bristol, and the people from RTE came over, and some people from BBC came down. And we framed some panels around just sharing knowledge, really, and trying to impart what we had figured out already, but also opening it up from a collaboration point of view to let people know we need you on board with this, and we want you to, as much as possible, understand where we're coming from so that you can lead yourselves rather than us, you know, just giving notes back and people kind of addressing notes without knowing. So that was the aim. And as part of that, Angel Eyes from Belfast came over. So Angel Eyes use virtual reality technology, and they've created what they call a vision impairment simulator. So Cullum and myself had experienced this very early doors. And basically, you put on a headset and you're in a virtual space, and they're able to kind of dial in different visual conditions. So they can say, well, someone with albinism on a bright sunny day, this is what their world might look like. Someone with very low vision trying to look at a blackboard, this is what they might experience. So they call the technology Empathize. And once you experience the training, you understand, because it's a real game changer once you've experienced that. So they came over to Bristol, and as many as the team as possible, you know, did the training on the day. So from that day on, we were in a really good place. I think we felt that collaboratively, the teams understood the core mission. Rather than it just being a show people are working on, I hope they feel invested in it. And, you know, Sun and Moon, the studio, they had done some digital games for people with vision impairment already. So this wasn't new territory to them, and they were fully on board from the very beginning. And with them, we kind of worked through taking a lot of the feedback from having met young kids with vision impairment. We kind of began putting the design together. So a lot of the feedback, let's say kids who really enjoyed any cartoon that might be on TV, a lot of the feedback was the visuals can be very fast, the backgrounds can be hard to see, just a lot of detail. So things that traditionally in a visual development world, you might think more is more, but actually less is more is what the kind of feedback was telling us. What eventually became the visual aesthetic of Maddie and Triggs kind of started from a place of less is more, let's think about visual minimalism. So we use very like strong geometric shapes. All the characters work very clearly in silhouette. We have a kind of color-coded system whereby the color in the world of Higgledy Piggledy and Maddie and Triggs, it's not representative in terms of skin tones and stuff. So Maddie, her whole color is pink and kind of tones and hues of pink. Triggs is tones and hues of yellow. Mum is purple, dad is blue, etc. So the idea there being, you know, if a kid has vision but maybe has quite blurred vision, they can still broadly see who is who. And in terms of backgrounds, I think it was a case of, well, what's the minimal amount of information that we can convey where we are? So we don't necessarily follow straight rules that, you know, skies have to be blue. But, you know, if it's a sunny day, we will see a sun in the sky. Or if we know they're in the kitchen, it's like, well, there will be key signifiers or stuff like edit. So a lot of cartoons, a lot of kids' content, fast editing and fast pacing is probably more common than it would have been years ago. Whereas Maddie and Triggs, our edit rate is a lot slower. It's not to say that we oversimplify the stories, but I think the visual cut rate, again, because of the feedback we had got and because we had heard from a lot of kids saying it's just a lot of visual information to process. And we had seen it working with Bonnie as well, how just fatigue would kick in. And I guess at its most basic, the universal design here is that each TV episode, if you were to not see the visuals at all, the audio will always work. So in the world of animation, there's generally a rule of show, don't tell. In Maddie and Triggs, we don't do that. We show and tell, but we make sure that we never put new visual information on screen that isn't also represented through dialogue and through scene. If people change location from interiors to outdoors, you know, someone might say, oh, it's a lovely sunny day, as we hear the door opening and the bird song fading in. So the sonic world is very rich and the sound design is very, very rich. And that combined with the minimalist visual aesthetic, I think, is hopefully what makes it as accessible as we can make it. Obviously, we understand that, you know, there's a spectrum of vision impairment, and any key information will ensure that it's centered on screen. From a lot of the feedback we got working with Vision Ireland and Angel Eyes and a lot of kids, their focus will be on the center, not too much information around the peripherals. We realize that there are other vision impairments where it's the exact opposite and people only have peripheral vision. So, you know, that we can't get it right every time, but hopefully we're considering these things upfront as much as we can.
And what kind of feedback have you gotten from audiences so far and from young visually impaired people watching?
The feedback's been great. I mean, we're still kind of making the first series. We're still in the thick of it a little bit. So on socials, for instance, the feedback has been really positive. And there's the odd comment you see, someone with a vision impairment saying, I wish this show had existed when I was a kid. You know, there's been a few of those types of comments that really tell you, okay, you're onto something here. One of the earliest feedback we got was, you know, some kids said that, and some vision impaired adults said that, often when people try to make stuff with vision impaired audiences in mind, it can be a little on the nose or a little patronizing or a little issues led. So often I think when we're doing our job best is maybe when people are just enjoying the show and just enjoying the music, because then I think, as well as vision impaired and blind kids feeling that they are represented and included in this show, hopefully a lot of sighted kids over time will, you know, learn a bit more about what disability can look and feel and sound like and how they might encounter it in their world. And often that's through, you know, quite subtle things that we might have in the episode. So I really like when people say that we had a 2-hour car journey last weekend with the kids. We put on your podcast and we listened to it start to finish. And often, you know, that's a sign of that something's working when there's no visual needed. It's not the iPad in the back of the car. It's everyone as a family listening together to these stories. So whether those audiences in those cases fully understand this, you know, the level of Maddie's vision impairment, in a way that's secondary. The fact that they're even all listening to a medium which is accessible from a vision impaired point of view, to me, that's a real win, that the stories work and continue to work as audio first podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. And where can people listen to the podcast and watch the show?
So the podcast, if you're in the UK, BBC Sounds, you can listen to all the podcasts there. If for any listeners in Ireland, it's all on RT Junior Radio. And the TV show can be watched on CBeebies and on BBC iPlayer. And again, if you're in Ireland, it's on RT Junior. If you're outside of either of those places, and you may not be able to access the players, the original 15 episodes are available wherever you get your podcasts, as people say. There's even some Easter eggs in there of some old little bits that we changed, but they're essentially the same episodes. And we like to kind of think of them as the early demos. We're also on socials as Maddie and Triggs, and there's some stuff starting to kind of appear on YouTube as well.
Well, thank you so much, Aidan O'Donovan from Turnip and Duck, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio, and we'll look forward to watching more adventures from Maddie and Triggs.
Thank you very much.